I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall. 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa. He's my king size papa. I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell, your king-size papa, in for the vacationing Mr. Malloy. He will be back on Tuesday night. I will be doing his show next Monday as well. It has occurred to me over the last 3 days, I haven't really introduced myself too well to you. Maybe a surprise, because there's been so much hoopla and blivet over the Iowa caucuses that I didn't say much about myself. They're like, who is this guy coming out of nowhere in front of Mike? I never heard of him. You can ordinarily hear me at K-Talk, AM 1150 in Los Angeles. I'm a regular there. I have been on the radio at KFI in Los Angeles, K-Talk, WRKO in Boston, KFIR in San Francisco. And I'm an actor and a retired rock and roll musician. And a dad, and one of the good guys. All right, like I was believable right up until the end, right? Oh, man. I'm here in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, where our radio network is headquartered on this show. It's funny, we're in this part of Phoenix called the Historic Garfield District. And you know you're in trouble when you're in a district named for someone that was shot to death. Okay, and it's a historic means, in the case of the Garfield District, not yet condemned and bulldozed. So it's a little skeevy around here, but it's fun all the same. And they put me up in a hotel in Scottsdale. And if you don't know much about this area, Scottsdale is where rich old white folks go to die. And so I was in a hotel in Scottsdale, and I found this place down the street from where I was staying called, I think it's called either USA Egg or the Egg and I or the American Egg or something eggish. It was an egg theme. And I was sitting across the way from these two gentlemen, both approaching 60, very neatly groomed in a white, gray, clipped way, neatly pressed Lee jeans and Stetson shirts, you know, like young pre-Alzheimer Ronald Reagan-looking people. And I overheard their conversation at this egg joint, and one was saying to the other, you know, there is no way in hell the Republicans are winning in 2008, and his friend nodded at him. Now, this is Scottsdale, Arizona, where the main thoroughfare through town is Goldwater Boulevard, named after Barry Goldwater, the one-time senator from this state and presidential candidate 1964, the one whose campaign slogan was, in your heart, he knows, you know he's right. And he ran against Lyndon Johnson, whose campaign slogan was, in your guts, you know he's nuts. And Johnson won the biggest victory a Democrat ever won over a Republican. Ironic, because 8 years later, Richard Nixon then won the greatest victory over a Democrat by a Republican when he beat South Dakota Senator George McGovern. So looking at these guys who clearly have had to have been stamped out of the Republican mold somewhere, they just didn't have... Democrats have this funk about them. A Democrat has a bad haircut, and Republicans got a neat haircut generally. Greens ain't got no haircuts at all, and Libertarians, they got dreadlocks. I mean, whatever. You know what I mean. Republicans are very neatly groomed generally. And these guys were Republicans, and they were saying one of our people isn't going to win. And one of the other guy who listened to this nodded. He's saying, you know, I saw Joe Biden on Meet the Press not too long ago. Man's intelligent. Why is it that people don't want intelligence in politics? They just want dopiness. They want silliness. But his friend nodded and he said, yeah, but I like that Barack Obama. And I was thinking to myself, now I have seen and heard everything. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, Main Street named after Barry Goldwater. I'm telling you, every time you drive past a police stop, there are six cop cars and one poor skinny Mexican guy with his hand on his head. I mean, that's how things run around here. We got some nutty sheriff in Phoenix named Arapaho or Arapaho or a Rapaboa constrictor around your butt, whatever his name is. And he's a fascist, too. And, you know, this is the old West Frontier. Here. And these guys are talking about, A, no Republican going to win in 2008, and two, we like the black guy. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, I'm eating this omelet and it has to be loaded with MDMA and LSD because now I have heard everything. And I realized this is not so. A new day is rising and things are changing around here. Even in staid, old, dry, dusty, musty, scorched earth Arizona, things are changing. But, you know, I got to thinking, I'm driving back to the hotel to do a little weightlifting and showering and then come here to go to work. And I realized something that I had never even considered. And we've been talking about the caucuses for 2 days straight. And I don't know if you've considered this either, if this has even crossed your mind for a millisecond. Barack Obama won for the Democrats. Huckabee won for the Republicans. Does anybody really know what the policies of these two gentlemen are? Let's say that my friends back at Egbert Humperdinck, or whatever that place was called, are correct, and Obama is going to be elected, assuming he's the Democrats' nominee. I couldn't tell you, in all honesty, and my friend Joe in New Mexico confirmed this today when we were IMing back and forth, and he said to me, almost in the same breath as if you breathe on the Internet, and we had to give forth with a GMTA to each other. You know what that is. Great minds think alike. He said, I don't know what kind of president Obama would make. And he said, do you think he'd actually be any good? And you got to sit back in your chair, you know, and give your typing fingers a rest when you're doing chats in AIM or Yahoo or whatever instant messenger service you use, MySpace, I don't know, whatever your poison is. And you sit back in your chair and you think to yourself, what kind of president would he be? And good meaning what? Good meaning competent? Good meaning ethical? Good meaning harbinger or bringer of good times? I don't know. Depends what, you know, Hillary's husband said, depends what the meaning of is. It depends what the meaning of good is. What is good to you? And I realized I came up blank when I'm talking to my friend Joe and I'm thinking about it driving here down Goldwater Street to the freeway. I don't know what kind of president Barack Obama would be and if he would make a good president. What kind of president do you think Barack Obama will be? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480, one more time with real feeling, 800-989-1480, that is our number here on the Mike Malloy Show. What kind of president do you think Barack Obama will make? If I got to go along with my younger Ronald Reagan-looking friends at the Egg Palace, and it is going to be a Democrat, not a Republican, not a Libertarian, not a Green, not a Taxpayer Party, not a Socialist, not a Fascist, none of the above, none of the below, and it is going to be a Democrat, presumably Obama, I think Obama is likely to win in New Hampshire and South Carolina, which will give him a ton of momentum. He's going to carry most of the states in the South, I think, in Super Tuesday. What kind of president is Barack Obama going to make? It is said and feared of him that he doesn't have a great deal of so-called experience. I got to tell you something. Remember when it was announced that Bush picked Cheney as his running mate, when in reality Cheney picked himself as Bush's running mate? I mean, let's get real here. Cheney was Bush's running mate. It was a payoff from Bush's dad. Bush's dad negotiated the sale of this company called Dresser Industries to Halliburton. Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton. Dresser had a $2 billion outstanding judgment against him in an asbestos suit. Halliburton swallowed the $2 billion. Dresser were favorites and friends of Bush's father. Bubbity-bibbity-bubbity-bum, he rewarded him with his son's spot as VP. That's how that went down. And remember, though, Cheney was supposed to be gravitas-laden. He's going to give the ticket heft. Well, he had experience. Look at what we have experienced in the wake of that schmuck as vice president. Assuming you believe that he's running the country, and I do. By the way, I don't know if you heard, this is a complete digression, but I feel motivated. I got to tell you this. Today in New Hampshire, Randy Rudy Giuliani was saying he wants a vice president like Dick Cheney. Rudy Giuliani. Either he's got 9/11s coming out of his mouth so many times that you think he's got freaking Tourette's syndrome, and now he's touting the genius of Dick Cheney, a guy who is polling at 12% approval. These people are wackadoodles, I tell you. At any rate, lack of experience notwithstanding, what kind of president do you think Barack Obama is going to make? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name is Johnny Wendell. I am in for Mike Malloy. You can always reach me at tbcwra@aol.com. The Boston Celtics will rise again. tbcwra@aol.com. I'm here to listen to whatever you have to say in the scenic and lethal Garfield District of Phoenix. Wendell, don't go nowhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell, Johnny Can't Fail here for you. Throwing down a little of The Clash on a Friday night here. The Clash doing Rudy Can't Fail from London Calling. Ian, should we bust out The Clash for the rest of the hour here, bring it in with The Clash every segment? I think I wouldn't mind that. That'd be really cool. I've been talking about what kind of president Barack Obama would make. He won yesterday, won sizely, handily, beat John Edwards and Hillary by 8% apiece. Should be pointed out that if this was a general election, Obama would have come in first, Edwards second, Clinton third, and Huckabee fourth. That the Huckabee, the Republican, would have polled in fourth place. That's remarkable. The Democrats really brought their people out. The Republicans didn't. But from the conversation that I overheard this morning in Scottsdale, Arizona, a bastion of Republicanism outside of in northeast of Phoenix, I would have to say that there's a lot more energy for Democrats than Republicans. Republicans are sad. I think they think that they're headed into the wilderness and they don't see any Moses to lead them out of it. But is Barack Obama not unlike Isaac Hayes? Because what was Isaac Hayes? He was Black Moses. Remember that in the 1970s? Is Barack Obama going to be the man that leads the Democratic Party and the United States of America out of the wilderness? We don't know. We don't have no idea what kind of guy he's going to be. The intelligent man is a civil rights attorney. He has done some labor organizing, has a wonderful wife. Apparently, his wife was his boss at one time. That's not a bad thing to know. But what kind of president is he going to be? In my opinion, he will be an improvement immediately for a few reasons. One, if I am Justice Stevens, if I'm John Paul Stevens, I'm thinking, at last, I can work on my golf game. If I'm Justice Ginsburg, it's like, at last, I can get out of Washington. And if I'm Anthony Kennedy, I can say, well, maybe I'll go and make up for my horrible decision in 2000, Bush versus Gore. Also, Barack Obama means that faith-based initiatives in their life are likely not to see the light of day in Washington, D.C. I know that he invokes religious language all the time. I know that he is a proud member of the United Church of Christ. That's fine. And he invokes gospelic fervor in the lingua franca that he uses on the campaign trail. But you're not going to see the Falwellian, Dobsonian interest and influence anymore. I think that's going to pass. And considering that over the last 7.5 years, the government, the Bush administration, has been instilling evangelicals and fundamentalists, especially in the military, especially in the Justice Department, if we can stanch that kind of flow of blood, get realism back, get people that love the Bill of Rights back, get people that get down to the real nitty-gritty back, that's an immediate improvement. But in the next hour, we're going to talk about the economy of the country. Barack Obama, if he is elected, has a lot of problems on his plate. So, what kind of president do you think he's going to make? What's he going to do? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Bill in North Miami, Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, before I comment on Obama as a president, I'd like to ask you a quick question about yourself, since you were talking about yourself.
Yeah.
You said you were in a rock band. What particular instrument?
Guitar, bass, sing.
Cool. Very good.
Okay.
In regards to Obama, I disagree with you in regards to Supreme Court appointees or in regards to anything any particular candidate can do once they get in, if they're a Democratic candidate, for a simple reason that until we change the congressional seats and more discussion is made up in regards to...
Bill, we talked about this last night, as you well know. The idea, look, if the Democrats have the Senate, the House, and the presidency, filibustering becomes an effort in vain. Even the Republicans will give up after a while, especially on Supreme Court nominees, because Obama will say, look, we ratified Roberts and Alito, even though he was ideologically incompatible with us. They are technically capable judges, even though we disagree with their judicial slant. You can't turn around now and filibuster us when we have legitimately landed in power. If you do, and you want to effectively shut the government down again, fine, let's bring 1995 back again. Because, Bill, as you well know, when the Republicans shut the government down in 1995, it destroyed them in 1996. Public is not stupid. Public, whenever we see these polls about, well, Congress is polling really poorly, they're polling even worse than Bush. Bush is at 32, Congress is at 25. When you ask people what part of Congress they dislike, Republicans poll in the negative 2-1 over the Democrats. Because people know the Republicans are being obstinate. They're trying to draw a line in the sand for their alleged ideals. But all they are in fact doing is setting a record number of filibusters in 1 year, which they did in 2007. And people know this. They get it. They ain't entirely dumb. Patrick in Phoenix, you're on with Johnny.
Hold 1 second.
1 second?
Hey, I think there's, I don't know that it's fair to say we absolutely have no clue how this guy will govern and what he will do. I think he's made it clear that he's going to get rid of the tax cuts for the very wealthy.
Well, okay, that's fine.
He is definitely going to do what he can for the middle class. He's made that pretty clear.
I got you. Hang on. We have to take a break. Our clock has gone completely slug nutty. Wendell, in for Mike Malloy. This is the Mike Malloy Show. We're talking about Barack. We'll be right back.
When I'm on my knees, one day is fine and next is black. So if you want me off your back, well, come.
Mike Malloy Show. This is Johnny Wendell sitting in. Having a real good old time. I'll be in Monday also. Mike will be back from vacation then. We've been talking about what kind of president Barack Obama would make if he secures a Democratic Party nomination and if he beats the Republican, whomever that may be. We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Steve in New Haven, Connecticut. You're on with Johnny.
Hi, how you doing?
What do you think?
I have a couple problems with Obama.
All right.
First of all is the basic thing that he basically speaks in generalities and platitudes, and you're not really sure if he has a handle on how hard it's going to be to affect the change in Washington with the status quo and the corporatism.
True. Steve, let me ask you something. Have you ever heard the expression, no pain, no gain?
Exactly.
Of course. I think that if we are in a dire enough situation at the beginning of 2009, you got to figure it like this. We will have had something like six straight quarters at that point of subprime mortgage and credit crunch misery. Agreed? It's going to be nasty by the beginning of 2009. It isn't like Washington can ignore the pleas and entreaties of voters, because at that point, you've got another election coming up in a year and change in 2010, and you may see everybody get thrown out. I think that Obama will have a short window of opportunity, And if the economic situation is bad enough, he will be able to affect a fair amount of change. And he has to. There was a caller, the call before you did, Steve, who was talking about the eliminations of the tax cuts that that Bush enacted for the top 2.5%. Steve, guess what? Bush wants more tax cuts. You hear that today?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's the most insane thing in the world. Government running out of money. You got to get revenue. And you can't borrow it from the Saudis and the Chinese and the Germans anymore. So what do? You cut taxes. That way, now, not just my grandchildren are going to be paying for his insanity. My great-grandchildren will be, too. I should have had that vasectomy. I would have saved money. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number here on the Mike Malloy Show. Ellis at KPHX, which is where we are right now in Phoenix. You're on with Johnny.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, Ellis. What do you think?
Great. You know, my comment was regarding Barack Obama and being from the South, and I was born over in North Carolina, the Triangle area, moved to Atlanta, stayed there for 20 years, and just recently relocated to Phoenix. And you know, there are some truths that we as Americans have to wake up to. And doesn't mean that by Barack being black that you know, that's the determining factor, or that the white person that would be the candidate is the determining factor. Yes.
Let me ask you something.
Who can do the best job?
Let me ask you something, Ellis. Just by dint of the fact that he has the name Barack Obama and is an African-American man, don't you think that that sends a signal to the rest of the world that America wants means business at this point?
You know something? You know something? You took the words, and that is exactly where I was headed. Because of who he is, Howard Feynman last night when they were doing the follow-ups on MSNBC,
right,
he hit the nail on the head because he said the world will see America as finally growing up and becoming a world player. And when we have a different face that can represent America, not just the, you know, the Anglo-Saxon face that has...
It's not just that, Ellis. It's like it's the recognition that unilateral policies don't work anymore and that you have to put or install somebody in power that has clearly mastered the art of negotiation, somebody who is a part of the most oppressed racial minority in the history of the United States of America. You make him president of the United States. Clearly, the man has the ability to work with those that would not be naturally inclined to support him. That's the message that goes out to the rest of the world. Not to mention the fact that his dad was born on the continent of Africa, was Kenyan. He went to school in Indonesia. His middle name is Hussein. All that stuff. And by the way, I see that constantly. The Hussein thing, and people think he's Muslim, and they keep bringing this stuff up. Not a Muslim. United Church of Christ. And frankly, if he was a Muslim, so effing what? Who cares? I don't care. I'm sick of the endless invocation of religion as is, which leads me to this. There are lawsuits being promulgated by Colonel Mikey Weinstein and others against the use of proselytization in the U.S. military that, of course, the Bush administration is overlooking. We are literally looking at thousands of rapture-loving warriors carrying on in the world in our name. If nothing else, Barack Obama will put the brakes on that kind of thing, especially if he picks my man, Wesley Clark, as vice president. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Brian at Winds in Miami, Florida. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, what's going on?
Brian.
Hey, I'm an African American, right? I honestly believe Barack Obama's... I'm a huge conspiracy theorist. However, I was iffy about him. I was still one of the guys that was like, you know, I'm rooting for Hillary Clinton because, you know, Bill Clinton is like the closest thing we ever had to a black president.
I heard Tony Morrison.
And then I was thinking, like, you know, this guy is just put up there. He's a puppet. He's a dud. He's just put up there just to, you know, compete. And now I'm starting to believe him. I'm starting to see that this guy, he has something in his speeches, and he starts to, like, I was listening to his speech yesterday. This guy he has a certain swagger about himself that
he's sort of like the New England Patriots of presidential candidates.
But this is the thing. he's a person.
Yeah.
And this is what I got from him. He's actually a person. Not saying that Bush is in the he's a person.
He has a greater level of humanity. Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's like he's not a recognizable stereotype. You know, my younger brother lives in Illinois, and he's known about Senator Obama for quite some time. And I said, what do you think about him? And he said, extraordinarily intelligent, but hard to figure out exactly what he thinks about anything. I suspect that a lot of people on the American left not going to be that happy with him. I will lay that out for you right now. I get the feeling that Barack Obama is considerably more centrist and prudent by his nature. This is a guy, after all, who voted present on many bills in the Illinois ledge because he did not want to go on one side or another on the record so as to make bills unable to pass, so as not to embarrass people. He is a born conciliator, which at this point, because we have a petulant brat in the White House who never bends for anybody, like mother, like son. Why couldn't Roe versus Wade have existed in the 40s? Times have got to change. I think Obama will make a good change. But a good president? Don't know. Stephen, also at Wins in Miami, Florida. You're on with Johnny.
Yes. I want to first just mention briefly, I happen to be Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And that's one good reason why I'm enlightened.
Why? Why? Because you're one of the chosen people?
I'm a member of a minority group, and we know all about genocide. Now, we're getting away from that, because that's not the issue now.
Yeah, thank you.
I also wanted to make you aware, so you know who you're talking to. The last full, I lived in the Los Angeles area for 3 years in the late 70s.
Yeah.
The last full year, I was a very active and contributing member to NOW, National Organization for Women.
Of course.
I was also an active member for most of that year of CED, Campaign for Economic Democracy. You ever hear of that?
Well, I'm glad that you're laying your bona fides out, Stephen, but there are only so many minutes in the day, so what do you have in mind?
Okay, well, basically what I wanted to say is, as you know, there are many Americans all across the country, especially in the South and in the border states, who are not enlightened like you or me. When they hear the name Barack Hussein Obama, and a lot of them aren't even familiar with the middle name, they're going to say, forget about it.
I got a question for you, Stephen. How likely would those people be to vote for a woman or vote for a John Edwards who claims that it is time to wage class war on the upper class? They won't. They'll never win.
Vote for John Edwards. That's for sure. Because he's from the South. Now, that's not where a person should think.
Oh, okay. That's great. John Edwards is from the South. John Edwards is from North Carolina. Did when he was Kerry's vice president, did they carry North Carolina? They didn't even come close. They were slaughtered in that state. Kerry managed to carry Massachusetts. Al Gore is from Tennessee. Did he carry Tennessee? No. He's a white man. His father had a big name in Tennessee. He was the vice president of the country for 8 years. Couldn't carry Tennessee. I look at it like this. You don't carry South Carolina. You don't carry Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Oklahoma. So what? If Obama carries all of the Kerry states plus Ohio, Iowa, New Mexico, Nevada, probably Colorado and Virginia. That's right. Even Colorado. Even Aryan Nation in the Rockies, I think he will carry. That's more than enough. That's 325 electoral votes. I wouldn't worry about Mississippi unless I got a flat tire there. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Rose, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. I'm very interested in the subject that you're talking about tonight. I have no idea what kind of a president Barack Obama would make, but I have a pretty good idea what kind of a president John Edwards would make.
Why?
Well, because he has stood up for the issues that are so vital in this country, for poverty, for education, for health care. He's pledged to bring the troops home. He's talking about new energy plans. He's the one that's standing out there and saying what has to be said. Barack Obama is not. He is not coming out and making the definitive statement. I think it's time in this country.
So you think that Edwards making the definitive statement is critical? When Edwards was asked to vote on the AUMF in 2003, he voted for it. He authorized military force. And by the way, according to Bob Schrum, who was a biographer and a campaign worker, Edwards was against the invasion of Iraq, but was talked into it because of political expediency, ma'am. That's not a good sign. If you're going to bend like a willow tree over something that important, it means that even though you claim you changed your mind later, your credibility is shot. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. What kind of president will Barack Obama be? 800-989-1480. My name is Johnny Wendell. It's the Mike Malloy Show. You can always email me at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. Write it down. Put it in your cell phone. Tattoo it on your knee. I don't care. We will be back. And one more thing. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. We have been talking about what kind of president Barack Obama will make. I got an email from one of you guys already with this ridiculous misconception. He voted for the authorization of the Iraq War. That was in 2003. He was elected in 2004. He had made speeches condemning the Iraq War while he was in the Illinois legislature. So please, he didn't vote for something that didn't exist yet before he was even in the Senate. Okay, let's try to have reality checks here. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Roger in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. You're on with Johnny.
Johnny, I'd like for you to speak to the issue that he's running as obviously as a Democrat.
Well, yes.
In 2006, the elected senators and congressmen that were going to
they're going to change everything, right?
And they changed nothing. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, they didn't change nothing. They haven't made as much progress as one would hope. And yes, it is true that theoretically, the Democrats in Congress and the Senate could defund the war in Iraq. Let me ask you something, Roger, because this really enrages me about the Democrats too. I think they're a bunch of cowards. Agreed? Generally, especially
in
Washington. I would not put it past George W. Bush to leave our military out in the damn desert of Iraq to die just to spite the American people in the Democratic Party. Do you agree with me that he is that kind of person that he would do that?
I believe after Thanksgiving next year, after the election, that he'll attack Iran and leave the next president that bailiwick.
What like his father did with Somalia, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, for one thing, he won't. Admiral Fallon, who runs our military in the Middle East, has already made it pretty clear that there will be no attacks on Iran over his dead body, I believe the quote was. Not a popular move. Attacks on Iran are off the table, one would hope. Brian, in Manchester, New Hampshire, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, good evening, sir. First, I want to say, talking about Barack Obama, there is somebody, for Americans for health care reform, sent out some paper information on very comprehensive on what the health care reform would be.
Yeah.
John Edwards was very much, and Dennis Kucinich comes very close to, they achieve universal health care.
They want single payer, yeah.
Yeah, Obama achieves near universal coverage, mandating coverage for all children, and I believe that's the most, that in a sense, that may be the most workable way. And the way things are going in the media, and
want to do it incrementally, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to tell you something, Brian. On the issue of health care, John Kerry, when he ran in 2004, came up with the most brilliant plan imaginable.
Yep.
When he said, this is what we should do. The average American should be allowed to buy into the same kind of coverage I get and that Bush
right.
gets and the Congress
Absolutely.
Gets. And, you know, in other words, give people the chance to expand Medicare, say, to cover everybody. In reality, Brian, then you got single payer for everybody, and you have, in effect, shut the insurance business and the pharmaceutical companies out of medical care. While on the one hand, 800,000 people are unemployed, the rest of us now have 20% more money than we would have spent on health care. And
that's
by
right.
The way, it is a pleasure to talk to somebody from the Queen City, am I right?
That's right, Manchester. And I just want to say quickly, tomorrow, yet again, the so-called Democratic Party they pushed Dennis Kucinich out of tomorrow's debate at St. Anselm's College.
Yeah.
And again, it's like the phony Republican Party in Iowa, too. They pushed Dr. Ron Paul out. I don't agree with him. I think he's a liberticidal, anti-pro-fascist corporatist, Ron Paul is.
You think he has the right to talk all the same.
But he has the right to talk. He's definitely a Republican. He has the right to be there at that debate.
Well, and also, it should be pointed out, Ron Paul got 10% of the vote. Rudy Giuliani got 3% of the vote. Why is Paul being excluded from any Republican debate? When you poll three times as much as somebody else does, I think that gives you a right to the table, one would assume. Only goes to prove the utter nonsense that is Fox News, as we know. Kefani, in Sacramento, you're on with Johnny.
It's Kefaniel.
Oh, really?
Because
they cut off the rest of your name, so it just looks like Kefani here. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, what I want to talk to you about was just the exuberance that all you folks seem to have over the fact that this man won one primary.
Yeah, caucus.
There's a lot of weather vaning that goes on and with the so-called pundits. When somebody does real well, all of a sudden.
Well, forgive me my natural inclination, but what is your point?
Well, my point is that all the man did was win one caucus. He's still got 49 states to go.
Okay, first of all, sir. He doesn't have 49 states to go. As you well know, it never goes to the end of the process, ever. By February 5th, which is 1 month from now, we will know who the Democrat and Republican are going to be. That is a sure thing. You can bank on it. Which is sad, because I got to tell you something, as a Californian, once again, having no say in anything kind of pisses me off. Jen, also
yes,
in Sacramento, you're on with Johnny.
Hi. As an African-American and facing racism every day, like almost every African-American, I still don't understand why you guys believe that Barack Obama would be the president of the United States.
Because theoretically he's the best person running, and perhaps the racists that you encounter are a dwindling minority, and maybe you should have more faith in human nature. I don't know. I'm not walking a mile in your moccasins, lady. I got no idea. My name is Johnny Wendell. I'm easy to find. I'm at TBCWRA@AOL.com. The Boston Celtics will rise again at AOL.com. Easy to remember. Just as easy to forget, I suppose. When we come back in the next hour, let's talk about the sad state of affairs that is the American economy. And do you think we may actually see emigration instead of immigration as an issue? Stay tuned. Don't go nowhere.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all.
I'm your king-size papa. I'm Johnny Wendell.
He's my king-size papa.
I'm in for the king-size papa, Mike Malloy.
I take the door off the hinges when my
baby's coming to call. Oh, yes, I am. In for a couple more hours for Mike, and also Monday as well. Mike will be back on Tuesday. Mike, unlike so many Americans, and I, unlike so many Americans, we have jobs. We're getting pounded at the beginning of 2008. CNN Money reports that jobs are weak and unemployment is soaring. Employers added fewer to payrolls than forecast, and the jobless rate hit 5%, a two-year high. This according to CNN. It's worsened in December. Due to a subprime crisis, a very weak retail in Christmas season. And I don't know if you are familiar with this, because as I said earlier, I'm a talk host at K-Talk in L.A. at AM 1150. We had a gentleman named Bond Dad on with us, Hale Stewart. You can go to his Bond Dad blog. And he said that an economic indicator you got to check out is unemployment in 2008. And I said, Hale, what are the telltale signs we got a recession looming? And he said, if unemployment rises and sharply, that will be the sign. Weakness in the dollar and poor retail figures at the end of January. So now we're batting 333 in this particular department. And the stock market plunged today. It sold off sharply on rising fears of a possible recession. There was a widespread belief in the markets that the Federal Reserve would have to respond to this report with another drop in interest rates. In other words, print more money. And it is looking dire and gloomy for the economy in 2008. Now, if you've been following this stuff as I do, and this may come as a surprise to you, but I am a former stockbroker. I actually do know a little about this stuff. I had a Series 7 license for about 8 years and followed the financial markets religiously. From a distance, of course. I am extraordinarily trepidatious when it comes to these things. I can smell a loser a mile off. And I know from following history that when you are 3 to 5 years into a war of any kind, the pump-priming spending, the Keynesian spending, as it were, where the government spends a lot of money in order to prop the economy up, it starts to fall in on itself. The debt load that comes from waging a war starts to impact public services and starts to make money tighter, even if interest rates are lower, because there's only so much money, and if it's going into military expenditures, it's not going to build roads. It's not going to build hospitals. It's not going to hire salaries for federal employees who rarely make it into the upper echelons, the upper class. They spend money. It's money that disappears. It goes to the same sources over and over again. And that has a lot to do with it. The other twin terrors that we're facing in 2008 are the subprime mortgage crisis, the fact that any imbecile that could rub two nickels together is presently perched in a McMansion that he or she can no longer afford. This has led to a credit crunch. People did not have enough money to loan as interest rates are rising. Now interest rates are falling. The government doesn't seem to want to recognize the fact that if you can't pay a loan back, it doesn't matter if your interest is at 0.25, nobody's going to loan money out. Nobody is going to take a beating. And we are going through all the bad paper in real estate now. You are going to see quite a few failures in credit cards. You're going to see repossessions of homes become record-like. And also CNN, which says that jobs are weak and unemployment soars, are telling us that consumers are now more late on loans than they have been in the last 7 years. That consumers, by record numbers, are facing 30 days past due notices. You one of those? Listen to this. Late payments on a cluster of consumer loans, including those for automobiles, home improvement, and certain home equity loans, climbed to their highest point since the country's last recession, which was the two middle quarters of 2001. The American Bankers Association reported the delinquency rate on a composite of consumer loans increased to 2.5%. That's sharply up from 2.25%. 2.5% late on loans. You are talking about Peter robbing Paul to pay John. Paul can't be robbed anymore. Now Peter and Paul and John are all out of money. Late payments on credit cards, however, dipped a bit. The delinquency rate is only at 4.25% now. Now, payments are considered delinquent if they're more than a month past due. The survey is based on information supplied by more than 300 banks. A severe housing slump and weakening home values have clobbered some homeowners, making it difficult or impossible for them to pay their monthly mortgages. Here's the deal. They could never cover those monthly mortgages in the first place. What they were hoping for is that they would keep flipping houses as if they were day traders punching out penny stocks, as if they were kids playing baseball cards, as if they were playing mumblety peg and marbles. But houses are gigantic purchases, and when interest rates rise and you are stuck with a home that you bought that you can no longer sell because it was overvalued in the first place, those interest rates eat you up and then you become delinquent on your loan, and that's why we are at record levels. In 2007, personal bankruptcies jumped 40%. The mortgage crisis is part of this. The number of Americans filing for consumer bankruptcy increased by 40%. 801,000 last year compared to 570,000 in 2006. It's made worse by the home mortgage crisis. they seem to have declined a bit in December. People are already going Chapter 11 before Christmas to try to reorganize. Although, as you know, the bankruptcy bill makes it that much harder to start over again. Are you feeling this yet yourself? Are these numbers abstract, or are they real in your life as you open your bills and you put them up against your pay stubs and you realize that they do not connect, that they do not even it up? Are you feeling this in your own life yet? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Are you feeling this crunch personally, or is it still just something you read about? Me? We don't own a house. We rent. We don't buy anything on credit. We pay cash for everything, my wife and I. And when we do buy something on a credit card, we pay it off in 30 days. We will not give these animals, these vultures, these barnacles, these lampreys of finance any extra money. But I am not you, and you are not me. And I've seen this with some of my peers. I have seen this all over the country in phone calls and in emails from people who say, I don't know what happened. But now that we are beginning to see the results of a very difficult 2007 and foreclosures, etc., et al., ad nauseum at a high, consumers laid on loans, bankruptcies jumping through the roof, and the Labor Department telling us that greater job losses than the ones that we found out about today. And by the way, this nonsense about 5% unemployment, you and I know it's more like 10, 11%. If you're underemployed and part-time employed, you're not unemployed. If you went back to school because you gave up, you're not unemployed anymore. If you're off the rolls and you report back, well, I've just plain given up. I'm living off my savings or credit cards, which I intend to default on. You're no longer unemployed. It's not 5%. It's not one out of every 20 people in the workforce. Are you feeling this yet yourself? We are at 800-989-1480. We got a December employment report, a net gain of 70,000 jobs this month. However, you got to come up with 150,000 jobs per month to make up for all of the people that are entering the workforce from school or who turn 18. That's how it works. You got to come up with 1,800,000 new jobs every year, and they aren't there. And I got to tell you something. We were talking about Barack Obama in the last hour. I barely mentioned Huckabee or I don't know if McCain becomes their nominee. Hey, that certainly would. Get out of here, McCain. I don't see how a Republican is going to stand with his arm, or her, well, it's his arm around George Bush in Minneapolis this summer at their convention, and leer at the assembled with the economy going into the toilet. That's their problem, however, not mine. Let's talk about yours. Are you feeling the impact of all of these difficult numbers that surfaced today and sent the stock market reeling? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name is Wendell. I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. I'm in for Mike Malloy. He'll be back on Tuesday. I'll be back in a moment. And here is the watchword of my faith. Don't go anywhere.
Mama, look there, the children are playing in the street again. Don't you know what happened down there? A youth of 14 got shot down there. The cocaine guns jammed downtown. The killing clowns, the blood money men. Washington money.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. Mike will be back on Tuesday. We're talking about these horrific figures that came out today. Economists are now saying recession fears could lead to weak employment in 2008. Companies become more cautious about adding workers. The official rate of unemployment went from 4.7 to 5.0 today. The Monster Employment Index, which tracks online job listings, fell 14 points, with about half of that decline attributed to seasonal factoring, according to the firm. That is not good when that happens in December. And there was only a gain of 40,000 jobs in the private sector in the month, sharply off the 173,000 it calculated. Oh, by the way, we got a Republican President George Bush for a smaller government and less government spending. The government added 131,000 jobs in December. Without those, you would be looking at about a 5.3, 5.4. So never let it be said that one's ideals and principles go right down the toilet when real life intrudes, Republican or Democrat. Oh, and by the way, later this hour, I got to tell you this, we got these Royal Flush Impeach Bush cards. We got them. They identify the top 54 reasons to investigate, impeach, and charge the Bush crime family with crimes against the Constitution, the U.S., and the world. We got two decks to give away this evening. We're going to give them away at the end of the show, so be on the ready to answer the critical question, which I have not yet thought of. We're at 800-989-1480. Dexter in Tempe, Arizona, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, I appreciate you mentioning those employment stats. My wife works in the mortgage industry, and she's noticed that there were a lot of people that just had amazing expectations about the economy continuing to expand, jobs continuing to be available, their income expanding, expecting that they would continue to be able to afford homes.
Now Tempe is south of Phoenix, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so... everywhere I go, I've been in Phoenix for 3 days now, I see construction everywhere. You'd think the place was booming. Now, apparently this is not so. I mean, anecdotally, all I see is everything going up constantly here.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of room and certainly a lot of building. I worked in the construction trades back when I was in college years ago.
Yeah.
And, it's been a big basic part of the economy in the Phoenix area because there's so much wide open space. People are
right.
Just wanting to slap houses in everywhere they
right.
go. So,
but if you've got a weakening economy, you get developments and subdevelopments built, and then they stand vacant for years, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we saw that in California in the 90s.
Yeah, they don't learn here, apparently, from what...
apparently not. No, well, they brought me in, so that there's the evidence right there. So what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think that, again, you're going to continue to have this implosion, and the economy is going to continue to fall in on itself. And I think your predictions are true. I just think that there's a significant number of people who thought that the economy was going to continue to expand.
I don't know if it was going to continue to expand. I think they thought that housing prices were going to go up forever, that it wasn't a bubble. And what's remarkable about this is if you only make so much money a year, and even if you're a couple, if it's a man and a wife and a wife, a husband and a husband, whatever your couple is configured, and you only have so much money coming in, you can do a basic calculation that'll tell you you can't make a 30-year mortgage no matter what it look. No matter if it's interest only, which is crap, because it's interest only for 5 years. That's it. Or if it's an adjustable rate, it can adjust up, too. Can it not? Or you know that you can't cover the nut of the mortgage in 30 years. Because it exceeds the percentage of your income that you need to live. The reason that people bought these houses is because they were going to sell them. They were, you know, they saw somebody bought a house for $200, they sell it for $400 in 7 months. They're like, I want that grift. I want that $200,000 profit. Yeah, it's a short-term capital gain. I get socked by the government. I get socked by the state. So what? I still walk out with $140,000 in profit. I want to get on that gravy train. People don't understand that once you see the gravy train pulling out of the station and you are sitting there on the platform, it means it's gone. Don't wait for the next one. You're done. They don't look at it like that way. They don't ever learn. You are right. Kevin, in Orlando,
yes.
Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
Kevin.
Hey, I'm sorry if I'm coming home from the Orlando Magic game, so I'm sorry if the sound isn't great. But I wanted to mention something that you brought up earlier about bankruptcy filings being up 40%.
Yeah, that's what they said.
And that's correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of that has to do with the economy, and you pointed that out in the housing industry meltdown. But a lot of it also has to do with people realizing that the myth perpetuated by creditors and credit card companies about the new bankruptcy law is completely false. I would say that 7 out of the 10 people that I meet with on a daily basis.
What do they think that is wrong?
They think that either, number one, that bankruptcy is no longer an option, that they can't file.
Right.
Or that it's so incredibly impossible because they have to pay back all of their debts, or that they make too much money, or what creditors tell, you know, the first person that a lot of my clients call are the creditors themselves who are calling them. Well, actually, they're
Which is a mistake. They should be calling you.
Well, they should be calling someone who has an unbiased opinion towards.
Where can people go for the straight truth then, Kevin?
I would look online, look on the internet, search for bankruptcy attorney, attorneys.
In other words, don't panic. Okay, look for a bankruptcy attorney. Don't talk to your creditor. They were never your friend in the first place. Thank you, Kevin. When we return, let's talk about a possible solution or a possible trend that nobody ever talks about. Emigration. Wendell, in for Malloy. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. We have been talking about the economy. And later in the show, we're going to give away some Impeach Bush decks of cards. How ironic when you think about it. We're giving away decks of cards about a guy who ain't playing with a full deck. Seems sort of wrong in a way. Although, on the other hand, if you got a couple of jokers in there, you're okay Bush-wise. And, Bush wants to be the king of America with his unitary executive, and he can be the king of hearts, the so-called suicide king. Boy can dream, can he? Is the crappy economy affecting you personally? We have talked about bankruptcies jumping 40%, more consumers late on loans than they have been in the last 7 years. Unemployment soaring to 5% today. Cautions of job losses ahead. Is it affecting you personally, or is it just something in the news that you smile about, like Britney Spears losing her kids and her mind? We're at 800-989-1480. I know the economy and Britney Spears aren't the same thing. Britney Spears actually had a few hits this decade. The economy hasn't. 800-989-1480, that is our number. John on Winds in Miami, you're on with Johnny.
Oh, hi. What I wanted to tell you is, the housing market is grotesque here in Miami, and Key West. My block, which is a nice area, it's called Coconut Grove of Miami.
Right.
14 houses, 11 are for sale. 11,
yeah.
And they've been on the market almost a year, every one.
What would you attribute the weakness in the housing market in South Florida to, John?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Why is it so weak in South Florida right now?
They've grotesquely overbuilt. There's just not enough money here. And also taxes, real estate taxes here are way too high. But they really, really overbuilt, and the prices of these units are way too high. They have gigantic condominium buildings in downtown Miami and in Miami Beach that are almost 90% vacant. They're enormous. I have no idea what they're going to do. It's a disaster of titanic proportions, and they're not even talking about it down here. I think they're all afraid to do it. Now, the other thing is,
John, you know what the solution is, don't you?
Go ahead.
Two words. Legalize cocaine. Anyway, you were saying, go ahead.
I think it is the legal part down here.
I'll kill him like a cockroach. I could just hear Al Pacino as Scarface right now.
There you go.
You want to fix the housing market, we kill them like cockroaches. Yeah, go ahead.
I live in Manhattan, and I live near Lexington Avenue. There are parts of Lexington Avenue where there's absolutely no retail. There are no stores. The stores are closing. This is unheard of on Lexington and 3rd Avenue in Manhattan.
What are the cross streets?
Really, really bad.
What are the cross streets?
In fact, Park Avenue. I was walking up Park Avenue the other day between, I think it was 35th and 37th. there's like no stores. They're all closing one by one. Of course, there's the banks. There's still banks and the pharmacies and the stores.
Right.
But everything else, restaurants are closing one by one. It's really, really bad.
That's...
I don't think anyone realizes how bad it is. Except for maybe people like you. The media certainly isn't talking about it.
Well, they
it's
don't
really,
want to be.
Really, John.
They
better do something about it because it's going to be a titanic disaster real
soon.
Crime is already shooting up in almost every city.
John, listen to me. Yes, I talk about it in the media. I have this weird compulsion to tell the truth. But you know that the mainstream media in America, excuse me, the SMSM, the sucking mainstream media, they are not going to do anything that jeopardizes their friends in the lower part of Manhattan, where Wall Street is, where Murray Hill goes on Lexington and 38th, say, is of no consequence to Wall Street because their money is liquid. It flows from nation to nation. Who cares if the real estate market in Manhattan tanks a little? As long as it isn't my condo, as long as Donald Trump's tower is still prime real estate, we're all happy. Therefore, we keep spreading the happy juice, the Kickapoo juice, to the suckers to keep them in the stock market when things are going bad, when you could see another reprise of October 1987 or of the year of our Lord 1929 sometime in 2008. Bush was talking about unveiling an economic stimulus package today. Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, not exactly the most spineful of opponents, have said, this thing isn't going to work. You can't, la-di-da if you cut taxes again. So what? You cut taxes on the top 2%. What do they do with their tax break? They go buy a condo in Dubai where they don't have to pay taxes at all. They don't put the money back into the American economy. This trickle-down economy is a lot of crap. The only trickle-down it reminds me of is when I used to take a leak on a tree as a five-year-old. That's the same kind of trickle-down effect you have. Actually, it's a little worse now. It's more like trickle-down, you got the runs, and it runs down the back of your legs. That's how stinky it is. I'm sorry for the revolting image, Ian, but that's how the economy is right now. You're horrified. I got two guys in the other room. They're having the dry heaves right now in unison. If they can get a good two-part harmony going, we'll get a third guy, three-part harmony. We'll have a barbershop puking trio in the next room. Well, I'm sorry. I'm compulsive in that I have to tell the truth here. The economy is worth pooping and puking over right now. I'm sorry. I know that if you go to some stinko paid program somewhere on the radio dial and they're going to blow sunshine up your rectum for however many hours they paid some stinking radio company for, well, fine. But we're here to tell you the truth. And that might be why you actually listen to us, because we're not going to snow you. We're not going to turn this into the Route 80 of Sacramento to Reno at this point. They say in California they're going to get 10 feet of snow. I'm not going to drop 10 feet of snow on you. I'm always going to tell you the truth, whether you like it or not. Now, I wanted to pose this question earlier. I seem to have digressed. Is it or is it not a distinct possibility that we may see in America for the first time in my lifetime more people emigrating out of the U.S. than immigrating in? I'm sitting here in Arizona. They just enacted a tough new anti-illegal immigrant law, which fines employers $10,000 for each illegal that they hired knowingly. Of course, that's the proviso, the codicil in the law that employers are going to probably be able to climb through loophole-wise. However, they want to stop illegal immigration here in Arizona. What I want to know is this. If jobs keep hemorrhaging out of America, if the price of oil and gasoline keeps rising and makes the nations of Russia, Iran, and Venezuela flush with cash, if our dollar becomes so useless that it isn't a question of squeezing the Charmin, Charmin is going to be worth more per square than the dollar, we may just end up seeing an exodus out of America. Have you considered the possibility yourself of leaving the country for greener pastures if you could? It has crossed my mind. Would you go? Have you decided that you may have had enough, the economy sucks, and you have a better break somewhere else? There are parts of the world, like Australia, that need people that have software writing skills. There are places in Dubai and Saudi Arabia where they need skilled construction workers, because that's where all our money is right now, building palaces. They need financial consultants in Hong Kong because the People's Republic of China is sitting on top of $600 billion worth of American debt and rising. Have you thought about emigrating? We'll take your calls on other stuff first, but if you thought about emigrating, we're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. That is our number. Mary in Tupelo, there you are. Whoops, I lost you, Mary. You can call back if you like. There's another Mary. Mary in Sacramento, you're on with Johnny.
Hi.
Mary.
I'd like to tell you my story, and it does concern the subprime mortgage situation.
Go ahead.
My husband and I have already filed for bankruptcy.
All right.
And it was done in 2004 because we both got sick and our health care didn't pay. And right after that, after we filed for bankruptcy, we got sick again.
Yeah.
And we refinanced our house three times to pay our hospital bills. And now we have no work. We're self-employed, and we got an intent to foreclose a couple of days ago in the mail.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. We're looking for work. We're both self-employed. We're graphic designers, and we really haven't pulled out of the situation we found ourselves in a couple of years ago when we were both sick twice in 2 years with serious diseases. And it decimated us, and we were forced into the subprime situation.
Isn't this incredible, huh? Your backs are up against it. You know what's interesting, Mary, is in the latter part of the 90s, we never used to hear stories like this, but at the beginning of the 90s, we did. It's unreal. It's like father, like son. I wish I had a solution for you. I wish I could direct you somewhere. I really wish that I could do something about your problems. I wish I had salve for your wounds. I don't, but I am feeling you in this. We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number. John in Mobile, Alabama. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. How are you doing this evening?
What do you think?
Oh, man, you're on a roll tonight. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the issue that the young lady just spoke about. She kind of stole my thunder a little bit. And
I'm sure she didn't do it deliberately, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, you know, really you spoke about the people who are living in the mansions that really shouldn't be up there, that can afford them anyway. And, you know, that's when I picked up the phone because, you know, I know myself personally and a lot of my friends as well are suffering from the bad economy and are, you know, in jeopardy of losing our homes and things of that nature because, you know, the basic cost of living for the average American is almost quadrupled over the past, you know, 8 years.
You know, what's interesting about that? They'll claim, John, that inflation isn't that much of an issue, and you know why? Because oil and gas are not factored into inflation. All I know is this. The day that George W. Bush was inaugurated president of the United States, the Arco down the street from my house, gas was a dollar. Right on the nose, 99.9. You want to know what it is today? 3.26.
Exactly.
And they'll say, well, there's no real inflation in America. I got babies, okay? I got two children under the age of six. They drink a lot of milk, John. It's gone up by 40% in the last 2.5 years. I know these things. I see the bill. Like I tell you, it's bend over and spread them wide, and they shove the sunshine up inside, except here where we tell you the truth. My name is Johnny Wendell. We're on the Mike Malloy Show. You can reach me at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. You're thinking it might be time to emigrate, to get a chance before it's too late, as the Kinks sang so many years ago. 800-989-1480. Let me know. Wendell from Malloy. Oh, yeah. A little bird told me. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell sitting in for Mike. Mike will be back on Tuesday. We are talking about all of this economic horror that is being levied upon us. I laugh lest I cry. Very bad economic news has come out. The question, of course, is bad enough to make you want to leave. Bankruptcies way up, being laid on loans up 40%. Unemployment has gone up to 5% for the first time in the last 26 months. Are you thinking about this maybe time to head on out of the USA, maybe go to Mexico, Canada, Australia, somewhere else? I've considered it. I got an aunt and an uncle in New Zealand. They got property. They love it there. They've been there for 36 years. It's a good place to go if we get nuked anyway. We're at 800-989-1480. That is our number. Kelly in Phoenix.
Hey, Johnny, how's it going?
Very good. What do you think?
Well, I can't. We, my wife and I, are probably the exception to the rule. We had some good fortune with the Arizona lottery,
yeah.
And with that windfall, we have some friends from New Zealand, so they invited us out. We're going to go visit Auckland, and
my people live near Wellington. Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, we're considering maybe relocating there because of the fears that you're talking about right now. I have a little 7-year-old little boy, and I know. Milk a year ago was the cheap milk when it was on sale was $1.47 a gallon. Now it's $2.50, $2 if you're lucky if you can find it. A loaf of bread is three times what it was a year ago.
I want to know why that is, Kelly. I mean, the same wheat comes out of the ground, the same workers are milling it. Why is it so expensive? Why? Because trucks need to bring it everywhere, and the price of fuel has tripled. That's what I don't understand about Americans, man. You know, it's like we got oil company people running the country. Shouldn't this tell you that when? And by the way, Kelly, you know that oil hit $100 a barrel the other day. You want to know why? Have you heard this? This will crack you up. One trader decided to be the first person ever to bid $100 on a barrel of oil in futures.
I think I just read that on Yahoo. Yeah.
Isn't that the most amazing? And you know why he did it? Because he knew it would automatically benchmark trigger a ton of trades and that he'd be able to drive the price of oil up to 102, 103, sell, and make his profit. Now, everybody's yelling at him, and the price dipped back below 100, but then went back up, and now it's under at 99 and about 15 cents. One jerk did this.
I don't see it going down.
Why would it go down? What's going to make it go down? And by the way, what's interesting is people say, well, you know, oil goes up, oil goes down. It's not going down. You know why? Because it has momentum, upward momentum. If you're in Venezuela or Iran or Norway or Russia or Canada or Mexico, which are net exporters of oil, a net exporter of oil is sitting on top of a ton of money because China is sitting on top of money. And they want that oil, and they have our money. They can outbid us for it. China can literally drive you off the road. By the way, China, 2 billion people, responsible for most of the carbon emissions on the planet, they don't care. We can't even get them into Kyoto. They're like, so what? Why would we listen to you? Your word don't travel so far east anymore. And why? Because we borrow money from them all the time to keep our silly war on. Sound ridiculous? It's true. Kevin in South Carolina, you're on with Johnny. Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
What do you think?
Oh, my wife, we're going to move to Russia. We're planning in about 5 years.
Really?
Yeah, my wife's originally from Russia. And we can have a brand new house built for $7,000. And that's what we're going to do.
You're going to move to the mother country, huh?
Yes, we are.
Well, you know something? Good luck. Das Vidanya. Have fun. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That's our number. Jeff in Iowa. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. How you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Hey, I'm thinking the fuel prices has a lot to do with inflation, Johnny.
Yeah, but you know something? They don't count it in the official figures, sir.
Now, can you explain to me why they don't?
Supposedly, it is a separate expense, or they believe that fuel costs are factored into so many items anyway that they're already taken care of.
Okay, because I'm an independent owner-operator. We get fuel surcharge, so when fuel surcharge goes up...
You mean you're a gas station owner?
No, I'm a truck driver.
Oh, you're a truck driver. Okay, go ahead.
I own
yeah.
my own truck.
All right.
And every time fuel goes up, we get more fuel surcharge.
That is correct. Yeah, it's the nature of inflation. Yeah, okay.
And eventually, that gets passed on to the consumer when they go to the grocery store, the lumber yard, or whoever.
That is correct.
When they go buy stuff.
That's right. And I mean, in effect, that is the reason why all of these commodities have gone up in price. But it's not like they're ever going to tell you that. Anne in New York, you're on with Johnny.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm. My husband's got dual citizenship in Canada. We've talked about going.
You're gonna emigrate, huh?
Well, I'm kind of curious. Is going to Canada even worthwhile with Stephen Harper with his hand jammed up George Bush's butt?
Yeah, that says maybe.
I mean, what's your take on stuff in Canada right now?
Look, first of all, Stephen Harper is conservative for Canada, but conservative for Canada is not the same as conservative for America. And yeah, he does suck up to Bush quite a bit. But I got to tell you something. Harper is not long in that country. They're not happy with him on the coasts in Canada. If he stands for election again, they're going to replace him. Anybody that stood with Bush, and also they're angry about their continued involvement in Afghanistan and them sucking up to us, so no, I don't think he's going to last. When we come back, we pose the rhetorical question to you on the show. When did you know you got old? When did you know you got old? You're going to like this, especially if you're in your 20s or whatever. Or I am alienating part of the audience. La-di-da. It's my show. Kiss my grits. Wendell in from Molloy. I'm at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. Email me. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Johnny Wendell here.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all.
I'm your king size papa. I'm in for Mike Molloy.
He's my king size papa.
And on Monday I'll be your boy.
I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
Oh, indeed you will. Your king size papa, Johnny Wendell, is here, singing and speaking to you through the night. I got to drive all night. I'm going to drive all night, just like Cyndi Lauper and Roy Orbison, to get home to my family. I'm leaving right after the show and getting on the freeway to go from Phoenix to L.A. I don't know if it's raining or pouring or if this old man being me is going to be snoring in between those two locations. I hope. I know they shut down most of Northern California, but as you know, geographically, California is two different states. Hopefully I won't be flash flooded into like some drainage ditch somewhere near Blythe or something, but I know my way around an automobile. I think I'll be okay. Don't know if you knew this or not, but there is a report floating around, reported by the Britain's Sun, which is a big newspaper in England, that Sir Paul McCartney has undergone secret heart surgery. The ex-Beatle went under a coronary angioplasty. He was not feeling well. He had an angioplasty done. The procedure is fairly routine, involves opening up arteries to allow a greater flow of blood. The Sun quotes a friend of Paul McCartney saying that Sir Paul has made a good recovery already. Says that despite his rock and roll lifestyle, McCartney does exercise, eats well, does not carry he's a vegan. He carries no excess weight, and generally is in very good shape. He was in fine form when he appeared on New Year's Eve in England. That's right, Sir Paul McCartney. When he wrote and sang When I'm 64, he didn't sing When I Get Old and They Open My Chest. Many years from now, they're going to stick in a stent or two. I'll get up and tell them to screw. How's that a song parodies go, Ian, right off the top of my head? Do I get, out of 1 out of 10, how would you rate that one? I'm waiting. Don't you, flashing a 3? You know, I can come in there and jump up and down on your head like a kangaroo, okay? Do I get a higher number than that? No. Maybe a 4. Screw you two. Anyway. We're a little surprised. I'm a little horrified when icons of my youth are undergoing angioplasties, or I was reading somewhere that the legendary godfather of punk rock, Iggy Pop, is apparently facing a hip replacement at this point. He has all of his tendons and ligaments on one side of his hip are gone, and the Ig is going to get a hip replacement. This is a guy who invented stage diving. This is someone who used to routinely crawl through broken glass while singing Search and Destroy, and Now I Want to Be Your Dog, and now he's getting a hip replacement. Now, I know that the Ig has been living in Miami for some time, but it doesn't mean that you do as the Romans do and get your bones replaced, Ig. Come on, tough it out, little guy. Tough it out. They're old. Paul McCartney is old. Iggy Pop is 61 years old. They're old. Our heroes are old. Pete Townsend said he hoped he died before he got old. He lied. He's still alive. Keith Richards is 176 years old. He's alive. When did you realize that you were no longer in the flower of your youth? When did you realize that one foot was in fact on the banana peel and the other one was pointing 6 feet down? When did you know that you were no longer a kid? We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. When was the great awakening in your life? It's ironic, too, because you're getting more tired by the hour. But when was your great awakening? Oh, my God. Oh. 1-800-989-1480. I got to tell you when I realized that I was truly old, when I'd had it. All right. I'm in the Burbank Airport. I got to go to San Francisco. I was working in San Francisco doing afternoon drive on an FM up there, doing talk, not music. And I go to take a pre-flight leak, like everybody I know does that. You know, you really don't want to get up during the plane flight, even if it's only an hour between Burbank and Oakland. You know, you want to take your leak in a bathroom while your feet are on the ground. Not when, like, you hit a bit of turbulence and spray yourself in the face with your own urine, which is kind of disgusting. Don't look at me like that, like you've never done that, okay? Anyway, okay, that's yeah, you were a year and a half old. Whatever, same thing. At any rate, I'm in the bathroom at Burbank Airport, and the Muzak comes on, and it's Rock Lobster by the B-52s. It's not a Muzak version of Rock Lobster. It is Rock Lobster itself. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And, I'm putting myself away and washing my hands, and I'm listening to Rock Lobster. Rock Lobster is now Muzak. Rock Lobster was the first new wave dance record in 1979, came out as an indie single by the B-52s. And now it is Muzak. It is so stale and so old and so harmless that now I can take a leak in a men's room in a public place and hear Rock Lobster. Turn that. All right, look, you're reminding me how old I am? Do I really need this? You can cease and desist right now. I was old. I couldn't believe it. Rock Lobster. Rock Lobster on Muzak? Makes you wonder what your kids' Muzak is going to be. You know? Like you're going to hear DMX and Jay-Z as Muzak. When you're going to hear White Noise as Ministry and KMFDM as Muzak. Rock Lobster was Muzak, man. That's how I knew I was old. Because people, they used to freak out when it was on the radio. What is this? It's weird sounding. It's terrifying. What's new me is punk rock. The B-52s are punk. They weren't. But that's what people used to say. When did you know your youth was gone? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. And when you made that revelation, did you do anything about it? Did you think, okay, what am I going to do now? I'm not going to listen to the B-52s anymore. I'm going to listen to Fallout Boy, or the All-American Rejects, or the My Chemical Romance, or one of the... You're laughing because I actually know all of this stuff. I don't mind this stuff. It's okay. It's rock and roll. The B-52s in a bathroom. That was my moment. What was yours? 800-989-1480. That is our number. Ken in Wildwood, Florida. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, good evening. Great show. And you'll probably run into rain in San Bernardino.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I got family out in California. It's raining in Malibu.
Yeah, but Malibu is west of me, and San Bernardino is 55 miles east. If I can get to 50 miles up home before it starts raining, I can go 95 miles an hour on the 10. I'll be okay, believe me.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
I moved to Gainesville, Florida in 1973 and drank at a bar right across the street from the University of Florida for 20 years. And
here's a question for you, Ken. What song was written about a suicide in Gainesville, Florida at the university?
I couldn't tell you.
American Girl by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Trivia question's over. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, good. I failed the trivia.
No, very few people know that. Anyway, go ahead.
Worked construction all of my life and was on the road and off the road. And this bar, if you worked there, I dated you. And I got in there after driving back from D.C. On a Friday afternoon, sat down and ordered my drink, and it was my daughter serving it to me.
Didn't you know that she was working there?
No.
How did you not?
She was a student at the university.
Yeah.
And didn't want her mother or me to know.
And
that
you were,
she was
you
also
were,
working there.
You were divorced from your from
yes,
her mother.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not in contact.
What was your reaction?
My reaction was immediately to find another bar.
Did she say, "Hey, Dad, don't drink in my club anymore"?
No, she didn't say that. She was first embarrassed that I found her there.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that when I came to town, I would be there. She just hoped that I would give some sort of notice so that she wouldn't be there.
Is she working there now?
No, no, no. She's working on her PhD now and doesn't have time for work anymore.
Okay, well, when she gets her PhD, she'll be bartending at the end of her postgraduate work again. So don't worry, you'll see her again.
I see her all the time. I talk to her today.
No, I mean what I meant was, Ken, given that there are absolutely no jobs in America, when she's done with her PhD, you know, she'll be bartending again. Maybe she'll be waitressing. Actually, maybe you get lucky. She'll have two jobs. You can get coffee from her at Starbucks in the morning and drunk with her at night. What a deal. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Yvonne in L.A. What, is it raining there right now, Yvonne? Yvonne seems to be gone. Bill, in Phoenix, you're on with Johnny.
The day I knew I was old?
Yeah, the day you knew you were old.
Johnny, I had a terrible day. I had an emergency bypass surgery.
Yeah.
And a stroke.
The same day?
Yeah. I'm a miracle.
And you're fine now?
I lost 50 pounds. I went on a serious livid. Lost 50 pounds, bought a brand new motorcycle, and... I just, what the funny thing is, as I laid there thinking there was a moment, I thought I was going to die.
And?
So I looked up and I said to God, God, two things. Please, I don't want my mother to have to bury me.
Right.
And the other thing is, I didn't want to die while George Bush was still in the White House.
Well, the Lord works not in mysterious ways in your particular case, but in logical ones. When we return, when did you know you were old? With me, I had a B-52's epiphany. Don't put that song back on. And we're at 800-989-1480. My name is Wendell. I'm in for Mike Malloy. We'll be back. And don't go anywhere, please.
The steel mills rust.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. We are at 800-989-1480. Sir Paul McCartney had an angioplasty secretly. He's 65 years old. Amazing. A Beatle is 65. One died of cancer, one was shot to death, two are alive. And Paul is not the oldest surviving Beatle. Ringo is. Ringo is almost 70 at this point, I guess. No, he's not almost 70. What am I saying? He's 68. We are at 800-989-1480. When did you realize that you were a lot older than you thought you were in reality? Not in calendar years. Me? I had an epiphany when I heard the B-52s as Muzak in a men's room. That's when I realized it's all ending for me. I mean... Muzak is it's one thing if it's in a commercial. I was happy when I heard the Buzzcocks song, What Do I Get? And Everybody's Happy Nowadays in commercials. Even though the Buzzcocks song, Everybody's Happy Nowadays, a hit song in England in 1978, was now being used for an AARP commercial. Did you know this? Everybody's happy nowadays. is in an AARP thing. I walked into a friend's office. I heard this on TV, and I go, wow, he's playing the Buzzcocks. Cool. And it's like, no, no, it's a commercial. It was for AARP, the Buzzcocks, a punk band from the late 70s. When did you know you were old, son? When did you know you were... I mean, believe me, that was earth-shattering. I wanted to lie down and cry, but my arthritis locked my knees up, so I had to stand there like a horse and sleep for 9 hours. We are at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Derek in Portland, Oregon, you're on with Johnny.
How's it going, Johnny?
Well, I'm old, man. No, I mean, what do you think? What do you think?
Well, I think your age is generally a state of mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think until a certain point, you know, your joints start hurting, and those are just physiological things. But when you no longer connect with the youth culture or even care about the youth culture,
yeah,
it starts to pass you by a little bit, then, yeah, I think at that point you can kind of stick the old flag on your back and call it a day.
I don't know. I mean, there's so much good, interesting new stuff, though. It's not like I want to go out and, you know, and tattoo myself head to toe and pierce myself and brand myself, you know, like stick a hula hoop through my butt cheeks and a railroad spike through my head or whatever and go to Burning Man and be the most outrageous person there, Derek. It's not that. It's that there are good things all the time, and I'm interested in them. It's just that I hate the idea of the parts of my youth that are being exploited commercially. It makes me think, like, why did I invest any emotional energy in this in the first place?
Well, you make a valid point there. I think of that commercial with Dennis Hopper that runs on MSNBC like every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that song is just so obnoxiously burned into my brain now, but I know that's from his generation.
What song is this?
The do no 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 no. I can't remember the name of the song.
What, like Give Me Some Lovin'? You mean di-di-di-di-di-boom, di-di-di-di-di-boom. Was Stevie Winwood singing it? Yeah, okay,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, my
so,
God, yeah.
Yeah, your culture is being co-opted to the point of, you know...
Of irrelevancy. You know, it's funny, too, because me and the boss here were talking about this today, about how the punk band, the Ramones, toured for 22 years, never made any damn money at all. They got by. They did okay. They broke up in 96 because, you know, singer had cancer and they were tired. This point, there is three of them are dead. Their estates make more money now than they ever did when they were alive. And why? Because one of their songs has that chant in it. Hey, ho, let's go. Hey, and you hear it at every sporting event. And their shirts are everywhere in Hot Topics and Target. Used to be you saw someone with a Ramon shirt on the street. You went, yeah, there's a fellow traveler. Now it's like, wow, cool dude, let's go skating. I dug them all myself. Or did you get it at Amazon? We're at 800-989-1480, 1-800-989-1480. Will in Michigan, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, you said there's only two Beatles left alive?
Yeah.
Didn't Paul die in a car crash in 1966?
You believe that stuff, right? Walking barefoot across Abbey Road and 28th and all that stuff.
I'm just messing with you.
Well, Will, did you hear that Mike Huckabee, of all people, invoked that incident? Did you hear this?
No.
Okay, check this out. He did the commercial with the subliminal Christian cross in it and the bookcase, the white cross behind him, and they're going, subliminal, subliminal. And when Huckabee was asked about it, he said, yeah, and if you play the commercial backwards, it says, Paul is dead, Paul is dead, Paul is dead. You know, at that point, I thought to myself, Huckabee, you know, he's a nut, but he ain't half bad. He's got a sense of humor. When we come back... Is lying ever acceptable in any circumstance? I'm going to give you one where I believe it was wonderful to lie. This is going to shock you, and you're going to want to stay tuned. Wendell, The Malloy Show. I'm at TBCWRA at AOL. You want to talk? Oh, yeah, one more thing. Don't go anywhere. Mike Malloy Show, Liar Liar, Pants on Fire, The Castaways from 1966. Liar Liar. Is it ever okay to lie? Are there certain circumstances where lying is not just acceptable, but commendable? If you're a parent of young children, you can identify with the quandary of this woman from, I believe, Garland, Texas, named Patricia Ceballos. And she was trying desperately to get her little girl, 6-year-old girl, tickets to see Hannah Montana. Now, the gentleman in the next room, the call screener and the board operator, they are not parents, and so they may not be aware of this woman, Hannah Montana. She is Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter, Miley Cyrus, and she is gigantically popular, enormously popular. My 5-year-old knows who she is. Doesn't much care for the show, but knows who she is. And she is on a major concert tour right now where tickets are going, and I'm being charitable here, at $500 a pair. If you can even find them anywhere, they're enormous. It's the hottest ticket there is. It's like an hour-long show, $250 a ticket. It's insane. And what's interesting about the Miley Cyrus thing is she's a huge Disney star. Her dad, Billy Ray Cyrus, is on the show with her. And this fictional character she's invented, Hannah Montana, is a youth icon. She's gigantic. She's bigger than Tiffany or Debbie Gibson ever were in your and mine's respective youths. Although in my youth, it's more like she's bigger than Clara Bow ever was. Whatever. At any rate, getting tickets is almost impossible, and this club called the Libby Lou Store, Club Libby Lou, sponsored a contest where you had to write an essay explaining why you should get these tickets to a show in Albany of New York of Hannah Montana's. And this woman, Patricia Ceballos, wrote for her 6-year-old daughter. She wrote this fake essay about a dead soldier. And she began the essay with, "My daddy died in Iraq." Died this year in Iraq, and I'm going to give mommy the angel pendant that daddy put on mommy when she was having me. I had it in my jewelry box since that day. I love my mommy. More of that. Isn't that beautiful? That's trenchant, isn't it? It really tugs at your heartstrings. I got to repeat that again. My daddy died this year in Iraq. I'm going to give mommy the angel pendant that daddy put on mommy when she was having me. I had it in my jewelry box since the day I loved my mommy. Okay, great. So the essay begins with a treatise on birth and death in the first few sentences. You got to hand it to this woman. It's brilliant. Problem is that they named a soldier that didn't exist that died in Iraq. And they got busted. They got pinched. They got busted by this Libby Lou company who took away their tickets. And now, this happened this morning on NBC's Today Show. This Priscilla Ceballos woman was nationally humiliated. She comes on and she's with her attorney. Oh, and get this, and a psychiatrist at her side. So she's nutty and she's in trouble with the law. And with this weepy apology, she goes, "I just wanted to help my daughter write a compelling story. There's no more compelling story than the struggle and sacrifices of our military and their families. I apologize to the military and their families. I meant no disrespect. I made a bad decision, which I regret." Now, I'm curious about something here. What exactly did this woman do that was wrong? Yes, she invented a dead soldier that wasn't there. However, so far as I know, there was no provision in the writing of this essay that said it had to be true. There's nothing that said this. You could write a fictional essay if you wanted to, right? And apparently she did. And she invoked the troops. Now, how is it that when George W. Bush and Dick Cheney do photo ops, they're always surrounded by military families, right? Nobody jumps up their asses. How dare you use our troops as props? Yet this poor woman trying to get her kid tickets to see a phony baloney Disney act as is, everybody jumps on her. Isn't this ridiculous? Our government lies all the time. This woman invents a beautiful little story. Of course it isn't true. She swindles these idiots who, by the way, could have vetted the story with one phone call to the military to verify whether or not this soldier existed. Of course he didn't. But did they go ahead? Did they vet? Did they look? Did they vet? No, you know why they didn't? Because it's a great story. Because it's too good. And if it's too good, what's the last part of that phrase, my friend? It's too good to be true. It probably is. I think that Mrs. Ceballos is entitled to those tickets. I think that the lie is not really a lie, because it didn't say that the essay had to be true, it just had to be good, and it was good. And the fact is that everybody and anybody puts, I support the troops. They put their little flags on their SUVs and their little stickers on their cars and all this. They claim how patriotic they are. They're no worse than this woman is, and they're not being forced to being humiliated in public. And the government that claims it, the government that makes it, now that you realize Bush administration is taking away bonuses for people that enlisted. That's right. You signed up for a certain amount of time. You were entitled to a bonus. They're pulling it. They're taking it out of the budget. That's lying about the troops, too. Should George Bush lose his tickets to Hannah Montana for this? Yeah, if he's got them. Now, the question was posed initially. The question was posed. Is it okay to lie sometimes? If the lie is harmless, and in this case it absolutely is harmless, no military family was hurt by this. This essay of hers didn't kill anybody. The government's really good at killing people. It's got a monopoly. It doesn't want anybody competing with them. If this lie didn't hurt anybody, and it was in fact a story that it never said it had to be true, it didn't hurt anyone. Therefore, is it okay to lie when it doesn't hurt anybody and it makes your kids happy? I say in this instance, absolutely. I take my hats off to her for fooling these people. They're a bunch of jackasses that would have no problem with exploiting the military as is. She just stuffed their hypocrisy back in their face. I say right on to Priscilla Ceballos, wherever you are, honey, I stood with you. You never should have apologized. And you should have said, I'm not giving the damn tickets back. Kiss my ass. Do you agree? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Should they have taken the tickets away from this woman? No. She won them fair and square. So what if she lied? They didn't say it had to be true. It was a good essay. Was Moby Dick true? No. Is it a good book? Yeah. The Bible is called the good book. Is all of it true? I dare say not. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. I'm all for this woman. Writing a counterfeit essay to see a counterfeit band, I can't think of a more appropriate epitaph for America in 2008. We're at 800-989-1480. I'm telling you, they have no right to take her tickets away. And by the way, for you alternative rock fans that believe that there was ever any real integrity in your heroes, one of the backup singers in Hannah Montana's band is a woman named Kay Hanley, was the front person of Letters to Cleo, an alti rock band that had a hit record in the 90s. That song, Here and Now, big hit on Melrose Place. Yeah, she's backing up Hannah Montana. Sorry to take a leak on your dream, but better that than in my face in an airplane. You know what I'm saying, Ian? We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Bobby in Portland, Oregon, you're on with Johnny.
Yes, I agree with you about that, the ticket thing. I don't think that's that big of a deal, to be honest with you. But matter of fact, it's kind of funny. We are a little off because I'm on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to you talking about Obama, so I guess.
Oh, that's right. You got the time delay going on. Yeah.
Sorry. It's fine because anyway, I wanted to also say that I'm a vet, and yeah. I was in the military, and I retired when Bush started talking about going into Iraq.
Yeah.
Because by understanding the military for so many years, I knew that it was kind of funny when I went in the military, Ronald Reagan was president. When I got out of the military, George Bush was impersonating the president.
One liar after another, huh?
Yeah, and so I had no intent on dying because of a lie that I knew that a man had perpetrated. And, I mean, I was tripping because I was like, well, how come the majority of the people can't see this man for what he is?
Because you know why? Because in a nutshell, Bobby, they don't want to see him for what he is. They have no interest in seeing him for what he is. You know, there are lies that are harmless. Look, you providing a phenomenal vacation to your child. The kid didn't know that the essay was a lie. The kid didn't write it. The parent did. Now, I know as a parent, I would do anything for my kids. And, by the way, you want to talk about lies that actually hurt people? Let's talk about workman's comp fraud. Let's talk about tax cheats. Let's talk about foreign corporations don't pay any taxes in the United States. Those lies, that cheating, costs me money. A pair of tickets to see Hannah Montana in Albany, New York. And if you've ever been in Albany, you know that's no picnic. Sorry. Just being a good parent, I think. Steve in Front Royal, Virginia, you're on with Johnny.
Johnny, I just want to say I'm with you 100%. I'm glad she fooled these people. There's a certain segment of this country that is just...
They're hopeless.
Let me get my speakerphone off here. There's a certain segment of this country that is just wacko. And I've had enough of their false patriotism and, like you said, their little stickers on their SUVs. I think that, in reality, they really don't care. It's just a... It's a political thing, you know. And,
No. You know what the troops are? The troops are a cudgel to beat peaceniks with.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like they go like, I support the troops. That's not what they mean. They support George Bush. George Bush is interchangeable with America. That's fine. You can believe that if you want. I got no problem with you believing that if you want. I mean, you're nuts, but I got no problem with it. On the other hand, when you claim that you're pro-troop and yet you're for them staying in Iraq past their deployment... You're not pro-troop. You're sentencing them to death. And then they jump down this woman's throat because she's invoking that same syrupy sentiment for her kid? Nonsense. She simply did a great American tradition. As S.I. Hayakawa said about the taking of the American West from the Indians, we stole it fair and square and we're not giving it back. And that guy was a U.S. Senator from California. Why are you waving at me? What's the problem? Ah, we have Muzak. Do you think this woman should have given the tickets back? And is there any instance where lying is okay? La-di-da if she lied. It was clever and it was funny, and it's the American way. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Wendelin from Mike Malloy. We're going to give away some Royal Flush and Peach Bush cards in the next segment, and then I will see you on Monday. Don't go anywhere. Got my kids and the whole world seen what's in my pants. All right, now how was that as a song parody? Now, all right, I get a 10 for that one. All right, thanks a lot. Wendelin from Mike Malloy, the king of song parodies. We're talking about whether or not this woman who wrote a fake essay to get Hannah Montana tickets about a dead soldier in Iraq that didn't exist, whether she should give the tickets back and whether or not lying is ever okay. I say she should never give the tickets back. Nobody said the thing hadn't be true. It was just a good essay. The company that got all weepy. They could exploit a dead veteran themselves. Then when they realized they were had, they took the tickets away. That's nonsense. If they'd vetted the thing in the first place, this never would have happened. It is okay to lie about something harmless, especially when you know somebody's going to exploit you. I salute Priscilla Ceballos, and if she hears about this, she should have never gone on MSNBC weeping for contrition. You got fans and friends here on the Mike Malloy Show, baby. Lying your heart out is beautiful. Now, in a few minutes, we are going to give away... some of these Impeach Bush Now Royal Flush tickets. Playing cards. We got two decks to give away. I said two decks. She should dump that, man. She should get rid of that. Nah, it's okay. No, two dicks. Yeah, Dick Cheney and Dickie Betts. Okay, we're going to give away Dick Cheney and Dickie Betts. if you want to check them out, go to impeachbushcards.com. Impeachbushcards.com. All right. Yeah, what the hell? We've got two dicks to give away. Yeah. Anyway, we will in a moment. But when is it okay to lie? Blake, you're on with Johnny.
Yes, I was calling about the Hannah Montana issue.
Yeah.
I am very appalled by you and some of your callers saying that you're glad or that's a good thing that she lied about someone died in Iraq.
Yeah, but nobody died in Iraq. That's the whole thing, Blake. It was a scam.
Her kid in a position of writing an essay that's totally false.
Remember, Blake, one thing. Remember, the kid didn't know anything about the essay, though. The kid didn't know what the essay was. This was the parents. It was a contrivance by the parent. The kid had nothing to do with it.
It gives a very bad persona for her and other people like you who are saying that's okay.
I think so.
That is not okay to do.
Oh, but why? But, Blake, think about it like this. Nobody got hurt by this at all, really. The only people that were hurt were the club that ended up with a problem here. All right? The club had a problem. It wasn't. It was. Nobody got killed in Iraq as a result of this thing. They loved the story so much. They thought it was so juicy. They thought they'd use it. Charles in Phoenix, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah. Well, just talking about lying.
Yeah.
I guess Obama. I heard that the caucus thing was totally rigged because he had sent out 50,000 flyers. In fact, there was a story. I forgot who ran the story.
Uh-huh.
It was in December of December 7th
yeah.
or 9th. He sent out 50,000 flyers and told his little minions, "Come on across the border and participate in the."
And did they, Charles?
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
Apparently so.
No, apparently not. I got to tell you something. You have to be from Iowa. You can come across the border if you go to school in Iowa. I read the same article. What is nonsense? He had 50,000 of his minions come in. That's ridiculous. You going to roll the tune, dude? Yeah. Yeah, let's go out on it. Oh, okay. Let me ask you something. Do you think I'm completely deaf saying right on to this woman for swindling these people for the tickets?
I think it's rather clever, actually.
Yeah, I think she should be applauded for her cleverness.
Yeah, if there was no rule, if it didn't say it had to be, like, true. Then I thought it was fair.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Especially since the kid's the one that suffers. The kid, you know, now doesn't get to go.
Yeah.
And I don't have a slightest idea who the hell,
Hannah Montana.
Yeah,
Billy Ray Cyrus's kid.
Billy who?
He had an achy, breaky heart. Now he's got a multi-billionaire daughter.
I was trying to forget that. Thanks for reminding me.
Ooh, tell my heart. My achy, breaky heart. All right, I'm not going to make fun of that one. I can't top the Britney Spears parody. Is it about that time, Jasper? I think it is. Go ahead. Play the tune. A little louder, because I can't hear it so good. Now, we all know this song is Liar, and it was a hit song by Three Dog Night way back in the 70s. However, they are not the first artist to record this song, nor did they write it. Who was the first artist to record the song Liar? Who wrote the song? The first two callers that can get that win these Royal Flush and Peach Bush Now playing cards. We're at 800-989-1480. You got about a minute. 800-989-1480. You want to win the cards. Who wrote and recorded this song initially? 800-989-1480. I know that it is a very tough question. I wasn't going to give you some silly one because you guys are smart. You're not morons. I'm not going to ask you, like, how many nipples Britney Spears has or something. We've all seen them. Who cares? Who wrote this song? 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. And if you can't figure out, it's going to have to wait until Monday. I see that the lines have frozen. You people simply do not understand music trivia and its genius here. Oh, no, now they're all ringing. Okay. 800-989-1480, who wrote the song. Listen, I had fun. I got to drive from Phoenix to L.A. I'm out of here. My name is Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Show. See you on Monday. Bye.